Hello, eco-conscious viewers, and welcome to Planet Earth, our loving home. Today's program features renowned U.S. climate change expert Dr. Stephen Schneider, who will present insights on global warming. Dr. Schneider is the Melvin and Joan Lane Professor for Interdisciplinary Environmental Studies, Professor of Environmental Biology, Professor by courtesy of Civil and Environmental Engineering, and Senior Fellow at the Woods Institute for the Environment at Stanford University, USA. Dr. Schneider's studies focus on climate change, evaluating climate policies, and formulating technical solutions to global warming. Since the early 1970s, he has served as a consultant to U.S. governmental agencies and the White House. Dr. Schneider was given the 2003 National Conservation Achievement Award by the U.S. National Wildlife Federation and the 2006 International Environmental Award by Australia's Banksia Environmental Foundation. In addition, he founded the interdisciplinary journal Climatic Change and acts as its current editor. One of his latest books, Climate Change Policy, A Survey, will be updated sometime this year. Given his expertise in the area, Dr. Schneider was selected as the coordinating lead author for the fourth assessment report of the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize-winning Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. One topic we asked Dr. Schneider to discuss was the impact of planetary warming on plants and animals, particularly with respect to species extinction.
Can you further explain how the insects, plants, and animals affect the air that we breathe and why people should care about these extinctions, why this matters, and why, especially at such an accelerated rate of warming, it matters even more?
There are two philosophies as to why plants and animals matter to us. One is just simply in the tradition of most cultures and most religions, which is that humans have a stewardship responsibility for protecting nature and natural systems and living things. And that's an ethical idea. The second one is what's called ecosystem services. If you deforest the hillsides and then the soil erodes, then in a heavy rainstorm, all the water washes off in a big hurry and you flood downstream, whereas if the trees and the soils were there, you wouldn't have had flooding. So the ecosystem service is flood protection. You want to replace it, it costs you $1 trillion in flood control infrastructure with dams and other things, and it doesn't even stop the dams from silting up after 20 years. If we chop down tropical forests and change the climate and lead to the extinction of 30 or 40% of known species, which is the forecast that IPCC made based upon projections of the mid to upper range of warming, something like 3 to 5 degrees, a lot of the species are going to disappear. Nobody even has documented. You know, how many millions of beetle species in the Amazonia will disappear without even being known to science? If we lose them, we are losing, in a way, nature's Library of Alexandria, the volumes where life and the climate have co-evolved for millions of years.
Scientists around the world are studying rising global temperatures as they affect the Earth's flora and fauna.
There have been a number of people over the last 25 years who've been measuring how species in their region changed with temperature. And these were on all six continents, but primarily Europe and North America, because that's primarily where the scientists are. And what it showed was that plants over the last 50 years have been blooming a week or two earlier in the spring. Just look at the emperor's cherry blossoms. And birds coming back earlier. And that of those species that were moving, maybe 70 or 80% of them were moving toward the poles or up mountains, which is exactly the direction you'd expect. 20% were not. Nobody understands that. Most species haven't even been measured. So the question that you have to ask is, of those that have been measured, how many are moving in the expected direction? How many are not? About 80% were. If you took a coin and you flipped it 1,000 times, you got 800 heads. I don't think you'd consider that coin to be fair. So we are very confident that this is a real event.
What are some of the other aspects of climate change that Dr. Schneider is concerned about?
I'm particularly concerned about problems with irreversibilities, like loss of species. Once they're gone, they're gone. Or the Greenland or the West Antarctic ice sheet. Once they're gone, they're not gone forever, but they're gone for thousands of years, which is essentially forever on a civilization timescale. Sea levels rising many meters, completely redoing the coastlines and eliminating the coastal cities, and the majority of the world population having to move. These are not good things. And if you're in a giant tanker and you're headed toward what looks like rough water because there might be rocks, the last thing you want to do is go all ahead full. Well, this world is not only all ahead full, it's pushing the thing to faster than full and heading at the rocks. You've got to pull back on the throttle and you've got to turn the wheel. And that means climate policies.
When we return, we will have more from our conversation with Dr. Stephen Schneider, esteemed scientist and coordinating lead author for the fourth assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. Welcome back to Planet Earth, Our Loving Home, featuring an interview with Dr. Stephen Schneider, an expert in climate science who teaches and conducts research at the prestigious Stanford University, USA. Dr. Schneider suggests that other governments can learn from the successful efforts of the state of California in the USA with respect to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and thus helping to mitigate global warming.
The state of California has the lowest emissions of carbon dioxide per capita in the United States, half the U.S. average. Why is that? It's not by accident. It's because the state always had a culture of community protection, and mostly initially for health reasons, but later on for climate reasons, we've passed stringent rules requiring energy-efficient windows, energy-efficient air conditioners, lights. High efficiency means you get the same service. Remember, we don't need energy for its own sake. We need energy to give us light and heat and transportation and industry, but we don't have to have it waste. We have to be efficient. So that's the single most important thing we can do, is to get nationally mandatory efficiency standards so that California is not half the energy use per capita of the rest of the country, but the same.
Dr. Schneider also has some suggestions on how we can all help to reduce climate change.
If I talk to my students, they immediately tell me, wait a minute, we can't negotiate with how much the U.S. government emits, and we don't have that kind of power. What can we do? And I'll generally say, well, how many times do you drive somewhere? Well, fairly frequently. I say, do you plan your trips? Do you try to, instead of going now and then an hour later, do you think if you left a half an hour, you could combine them and make one trip? When you go to buy a car, a refrigerator, an air conditioner, do you ever read the label? Do you make certain it's Energy Star? Do you read it and make certain that you're buying the most efficient one? In fact, if the refrigerator costs $1,000 with relatively poor insulation and not a very good performance, and another one costs $1,100, yet it saves you $25 a year in electricity, that means you're paying it back in 4 years. That's incredible. That's better than any bank interest rate. That's better than any safe investment. So not only are you saving yourself money, but you're reducing air pollution that sends kids to the hospital with asthma. You're reducing global warming pollutants. And you're reducing our dependence on coal and oil and other energy production systems. So there's stuff you can do. Are all your light bulbs properly energy efficient, compact fluorescents or light emitting diodes or other things? There's a lot that we can do. Do you turn your computer off? Walk out of the room. Shut off the light. Doesn't seem like much. It's only one person doing that. But what happens if 5 billion people do that 10 times a day? It adds up.
In February 2008, IPCC Chief Dr. Pachauri stated that individuals should take personal actions to reverse global warming, including being a frugal shopper, riding a bike, and eating less meat. And in September 2008, when speaking on a panel at Compassion and World Farming, he stated that many scientists had contacted him and told him that the contribution of meat to global warming was much higher than the estimates UN had of one-fifth of global warming. Can you talk about the role meat and dairy play in global warming?
We have to also take a look at our own lifestyle. For example, in agriculture, it's quite clear that since animals consume dramatically more grain to put on their body weight than we would if we directly consumed the grain, it's very inefficient as you're dramatically increasing the number of acres you have to plant and the amount of fossil fuel you have to add to the system in the form of fertilizer and tractors and trucks that take the meat to the supermarkets and then the refrigerators. So it's a very inefficient system, and there have been a number of studies that show that.
Apart from environmentally friendly lifestyles, Dr. Schneider also suggests that people directly ask their government leaders to take immediate action in addressing climate change.
Go to the town meeting and ask them to get energy-efficient cars, put in energy-efficient traffic lights. And the town starts to do it. Then the town starts to pressure the county to have all the towns do it. Then they pressure the state, and the state finally pressures the feds. It did not happen because of the top-down views of scientists. It happened because people at the bottom end built up by community participation. Now we've got to the place where we can do it. And I'm becoming optimistic that we can make a real difference. And it starts with what you do at home. But that's not enough. You've got to link to other people and build coalitions.
We thank Dr. Stephen Schneider for speaking with us and for working on behalf of the planet by conducting important research in the area of global warming. May our world become cooler through the work of scientists like Dr. Schneider and through our individual efforts such as adopting an organic, plant-based diet. Thank you for joining us for today's edition of Planet Earth, Our Loving Home. Up next is enlightening entertainment, following noteworthy news. May heaven grace our world with love and tranquility.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/PE.